episode 784 of The Critical Myth. I'm John, your host, and tonight we have...
This is Gary from Jacksonville, and I just want to apologize for missing the last few shows. I've actually been watching all the shows, at least a good chunk of them, that we've been having to catch up on, and I think I missed recording the show as a result of it.
Yeah, actually, what we wound up doing, Gary, was just skipping, so I think we all missed the show, technically. So there you go. So everybody got a little bit of a week off as far as new shows go on the feed, but that gave us a little bit of time to catch up on the podcast feed, at least a little bit. But that's okay. It's because we are back with 2 weeks worth of shows to talk about later this week. But before we do any of that, we'll get into a few news items and other topics this particular episode of our show. Before we do any of that, Gary, if you wanted to give us any kind of disclaimer.
Yes, absolutely. Deep and thoughtful and insightful discussions, we often reveal secrets that have come up over the course of the shows. We typically give you a week, or in some cases, in this case, 2 weeks, to have caught up on all the shows before we discuss them. We don't mean any malice by saying that we will be talking about spoilers, but rather we don't want to keep ourselves off limits to discuss important developments in the shows. So I hope you're as game as we are to talk about some of this cool stuff that's happened over the last week or two.
That's right. And well, I guess the first thing to ask here is, Gary, it's been a couple of weeks. What have you been up to?
Oh, let's see. I'm still around 6'2", but don't bump. yes. Go for the cheap joke. Yeah. Let's see. Well, going back to Super Bowl weekend a little bit, my wife had said, why don't I put on my Kraken's jersey? And I informed my wife that I don't have a Kraken's jersey. She seemed to insist that I did. I told her no, and then realized that I really don't want my wife to be a liar, so I've since corrected that, and I now do have a Kraken's jersey. The Kraken's jersey, for those who aren't aware of it, it's a book series by an author named Scott Sigler. It's called the GFL series, and he's done 5 books so far, and there will be, I believe, a 6 that will finish everything up. But so a lot of fans have the opportunity to buy the main focused team, the Ionith Krakens, to buy a jersey, home or away. And I've seen it at conventions for years and often regretted not having one. So when my wife sort of prompted that I did indeed have one, I, again, did not want to make a liar of her, so I corrected that.
It's a good thing to, you know, smooth out any of these misunderstandings. Let's put it that way.
Well, it's not only that, but, you know, as a much more of a geek-centered guy than a sports-centered guy, when you do have that sporting event or sport-related thing that comes up and people, you know, are off to throw a jersey on, now I have something. Now I have a game to go to, and I'll throw on that. And yeah, some people might not have a clue. One or two might, and if not, I'll try and introduce them to what I feel is a really good book series. So.
Yeah, that's exactly the kind of thing that you can do. You can be a little bit of an ambassador between these big fandoms, so to speak.
Exactly, because, you know, if you strip yourself naked and paint yourself 2 different colors and yell for a few hours, is that really much worse than wearing a pretend jersey? I think not.
No, I don't think so either. That could also be a description of anything from going to a sports game to LARPing. So, yeah. Who knows exactly which one you may have been referring to. anything else on your list of exciting things from the last couple weeks?
Yeah, and I really wanted to be more excited about this, and I was very disheartened that I wasn't. Over the past week, I went with my daughter, actually, to go see Lego Batman. And now I had seen I don't want to say the original Lego movie, but the most recent Lego movie that came out prior to this. And I really enjoyed it. I thought it worked extremely well. I sort of loved the mystery of the crackle and all this, all the other sort of jokes and things that were in it. And so when I had heard that the Batman one was coming out, I wanted to view it almost as a sequel in some ways, to think that, you know, they can take all they were doing so well and duplicate it. And alas, it lost some bit of its magic in the sequel. Sequels are, you know, not every sequel can be Empire. So we, and in this is very true in this case. The jokes were there. You wanted to laugh at them, but they just, I don't know if it was the presentation or the bombardment of them, perhaps. You know, there's one thing to, you know, laugh every minute, every 3 to 5 minutes, and there's one thing to have to chuckle every 45 seconds. And I felt they tried way too hard. There were a lot of little memorable things, but overall, it failed. Just as a side note before I go further, the memorable thing I'm talking about was through with Legos, they basically summarized every Batman movie since '89. in the style of that movie, which was wow. I said that was really, really great. But again, it fell short. The jokes were thrown out as funny, like if you were serving dinner, but it just didn't taste any good. So I was severely disappointed. I don't think I had unrealistic expectations of the movie, but I really wanted to enjoy it. And as the comic book geek that all our listeners know I am, that should have been relatively easy for me to do. There were some adult jokes in this, but I got the sense this was geared to a 10-year-old in a sense that they didn't bother to try and include things for other age ranges, where I felt that the last Lego movie did do that. They might have glanced right over the younger kids' heads, but they landed, flat right into the laps of all the adults to laugh and giggle at. And it just really wasn't there that much for me. So I was disappointed. I really can't recommend seeing it in the movies at all. Maybe when it goes to like Redbox or Netflix, maybe, but I really wouldn't waste the dime on it. I hate to say it, but I just didn't find any value in it.
You know, I would have thought that maybe you had simply gone insane, or maybe your love for Superman had gotten in the way a little bit. But the fact of the matter is I've heard the same kind of comments from a lot of people who are of various Batman persuasions, if you will.
Okay.
And I'm a little surprised by that, because if you listen to the critical reviews at all, they seem to be very favorable.
I know.
Maybe they're looking for something different. I don't know.
And that encouraged me. And by the way, John, Superman is not a villain. Anyway, but it was no, he's not a villain. Anyway, but yeah, it was just I agree. I heard all these. I thought it was a kids' movie, and I was honestly going to sort of skip it. And when I heard all the raving reviews about it, I said, "Oh well, geez, my reservations maybe need to be put to the side because it's reviewed so well." And I guess it's an example where just because a reviewer reviews something doesn't mean you're going to agree with them. And sometimes, in your own opinion, they can be wrong. And I certainly think they were this time around. So this is disappointing. But as I said, there were some very There were some very cute little things, like I said, like the movie homages, all the way from Keaton all the way up through Dark Knight, was very cute. But that whole scene was 15 to 30 seconds, not long enough to save the movie.
And it's surprising to me, because I think that when everybody heard that this one was announced, they thought back to the Lego movie and they thought, wow, he was one of the most amusing parts of that film.
Yes.
So for them to kind of, it sounds like, blow it, and that's really disappointing. But I guess we'll find out.
And Robin, annoying as hell. I was hoping they'd have a "Do you want Robin to die" section in the middle of the movie, the way they did in the comic books. Alas, it never came up. Unfortunately, I was ready to vote, and it wasn't going to be good. Yeah. Oh, geez.
So you went from simply fanboying Superman to being full on annoying, huh?
Yes.
Wow, that's really surprising. I gotta say,
your mileage may vary, but honestly, don't waste your money. Please.
No, like I said, I've heard this from a few people, and it's just a little bit shocking to me that that's the case. But it is what it is. Okay, anything else on your list for this week in terms of interesting?
Let me think. I have picked up, but not read, the last Star Wars Aftermath book.
Mm-hmm.
So I picked
only
it up.
Read the first one, so yeah.
Yeah, so I haven't had. I actually picked up the second, Life Debt, and then the third one, which was, it's escaping me. They are in my book. I did pick them up to read them, so hopefully within the next 2 to 3 weeks, I'll have gone through them. They're usually fast reads, and while Chuck Wendig, the author who wrote all three of them, his writing style, I can take in dribs and drabs, so it's not something I can burn through both books in 3 or 4 days. And it's a shame. I've met the guy. He's a very nice guy. But he does not make for a quick read.
Now, maybe you know this, and I wouldn't have the context for it. But the only exposure that I've had to his writing style is in those Aftermath books, in that first one. And yes, I agree. The first Aftermath book, when I read it, I was going, "Wow," because I think he, and maybe you can tell me if it changed. But in that first one, he used a third person present tense.
And, yes.
Oh, that just gets on my nerves. Is that something that he does with everything, or are you at all familiar with his other work, or is that the only place that you've been exposed to it?
No, I won't say he does it everywhere, but it's not uncommon. I've read, I think, three of his other books, and it's not in every book, but it does show up.
I see. That's Yeah, and that's been a little bit of a barrier for me in terms of excitement for the Aftermath books, because, yeah, as much as I want to see that material, because it's supposed to be kind of the flagship trilogy for the relaunch of the novels in the new canon, yeah, they're just not the biggest draw because of the writing style.
I was really I was surprised by his their choice of him as a writer for this series, given the way it's laying groundwork and stuff like that. But I always had the sense that it was that effort to literally push themselves away from the old extended universe,
which I guess makes a certain amount of sense. But yeah, it is a very hard left turn in terms of writing style and what presentation people are used to. Speaking of Star Wars novels, though, because what I've been doing with the new canon is, despite the fact that they are trying to shove the hardcovers down everybody's throats, no offense.
Oh, you're not kidding.
But
yeah,
every single release seems to be a hardcover. And then they wait forever for paperback. Well, guys, then you're waiting forever to get my money, because I'm not going to buy the hardcover. I will get the paperback. So Bloodline just came out in paperback recently. Yes. I don't know. Have you read that one?
No, I'd heard of it, but I hadn't read it.
Well, I'll say, as a kind of maybe 180 from my impression of Aftermath trilogy, Bloodline so far has been my favorite of the new canon books.
Huh.
I think it's actually on par with some of the better old EU books. It's definitely got a lot more relevance in my mind to what's going on than, say, some of the other new canon books have had. And it telling the story of Leia roughly before Force Awakens, mm-hmm. Good choice. I think it works. So it's just something to keep in mind. That one might be worth picking up because, yeah, it is in paperback now. And I started this one earlier this week because I was on a business trip. And I'm about 2/3 of the way through, and so far it has not disappointed me. So,
do you know who the author is?
Claudia Gray.
Hmm.
Now, she had written a novel called, I think, Lost Stars. It was more of a junior or a young adult novel, and I don't know if it was new canon or if it was old canon or any of that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But I do know that it was pretty well received by a lot of people. And basically, as a young adult book, it kind of played out as almost like I don't want to say Romeo and Juliet per se, but something, you know, star-crossed lovers, which means a whole lot when you're talking about Star Wars. But yeah, that was definitely well received, and that is the same author. So I'm guessing that if what I'm reading is any indication, it was a pretty honest and accurate assessment. I would definitely recommend Bloodline if you are a fan of the current timeline or just want to get deeper into the new timeline. That's a good book to get into. And I feel like, I was just telling somebody this the other day who had read the book. They read it back when it came out, and they said that it felt fairly relevant to today's times and political climate.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like as I'm reading it now today, I think that it has to be even more relevant because there are some things that were probably kind of tongue-in-cheek allusions to current political situations that have simply gotten more and more relevant as time has gone on. So, or at least from a certain point of view, to quote a famous.
I thought our politics show was on Tuesday's show.
Oh, you're right. Maybe it is.
Okay. Yes.
but I'm just saying that it's a very political book because it is about the New Republic, its government workings or not workings, as the case may be, and some of the politics that are at play. And I think that it definitely could have some resonance with people in the modern day, even or in the real world, even. It's kind of reminds of certain things that people may find intriguing, the parallels and so forth. And boy, there's a lot that you could unpack there, because we didn't really get a lot of information in The Force Awakens about the state of play of the Senate or the New Republic government, per se.
Oh, yeah, and I almost always had the sense that they're almost talking about two separate tracks. You have the government alliance, and then you have this, I almost want to use the term rebellion again, but I'm trying to think what they actually, resistance?
The resistance, yes.
The resistance, which is not the alliance government or the New Republic at all, and I don't think it's even connected to it, technically.
No, it's not supposed to be.
And
yeah,
that's
a fairly interesting distinction.
Yeah, so it was that designation to split it always struck me as very odd. So and the books haven't helped to explain it. So,
well,
or at least not
seems to And maybe, oh, okay. As I said, I am about 2/3 of the way through, so maybe it doesn't quite land yet because there are things that might be happening in the Aftermath books, for instance, that I haven't seen yet. But it does seem to be pointing some pretty obvious directions in terms of the story. So I'm pretty excited to see where that goes, to say the least. All right, that having all been said, what else could I say that I've been up to lately? Not a whole lot in terms of going out and seeing anything. I was really hoping to go see Logan, but haven't gone there yet. I've heard really good things. I don't know if you have as well, but it seems to be getting really good reviews.
I have, although it does remind me of, I can see the comic book roots in it, so I hope they can pull off what I'm hoping they do. So.
Yes, I kind of know what you're talking about there, and I agree. It would be good if they could pull off the coup that they were going to need to in order to really do that justice. But we'll find out. It seems like they are getting a lot of really good reviews, not just from the critics, but also from people in the audience, which is especially as we were just saying with Lego Batman, probably pretty important to get them on your side. But I haven't had a chance to do that yet. I hope to in the next few days. So hopefully by the next time that we record. But no, just a lot of reading, catching up on things. I finally finished Navigators of Dune. Kind of was
disappointed. How was that?
Well, I gotta say, for the end of a trilogy, it kind of just ends. And I was really disappointed in that because at least the previous book had given me a good third act that I could sink my teeth into. And so I came away with a fairly favorable impression of it. But this one just fell flat. I kind of saw where they were going to go a mile away. They really didn't need an entire novel to get there. And it just felt excessive. And to that degree, I felt like, okay, I wanted to finish it out since it is their last one. That they're going to do so far as we know. But I was a little bit disappointed that it couldn't be something a little bit bigger. If anything, what it told me was that they definitely seemed burnt out. And it was very formulaic as a result. Not that their writing isn't notorious for being formulaic, but it was more so than usual. So a little bit unfortunate, that one. Yeah, I moved on to better reading material, so I'm actually fairly happy about that.
And I know you're definitely the gamer out of the two of us. Any progress in any video games or anything?
I'm still side questing in Final Fantasy 15. I find that it's just easier to do things that way. I think I told you before in the audience that I like to kind of level up and kind of overpower where I'm supposed to be so that it just moves through the game a little bit faster as things get more difficult because, you know, with this only so much time, and these are pretty large games, and I'd rather go around and play around in the world a little bit, and doing the side quests gives me that opportunity to level up, get more powered for some of these battles ahead, and also see the little nooks and crannies of the world. So a lot of it is a little bit repetitive, but at the same time, I don't get a whole lot of time in big chunks, so a little bit here and there, if it's repetitive, that's no big deal, because at least I feel like I'm making a little bit of progress as I'm getting stronger and so forth. But I definitely notice the difference, which is nice, because sometimes you level up and it feels like nothing is really happening, but in this case, I do feel like things that used to be a lot more difficult, I'm suddenly breezing through, so that's good. That's the way I want it to be. but that's it. I mean, with all the travel and everything, I really didn't have a lot of gaming time, unfortunately. But that would be it as far as my activities. As I said, I was on a trip, so not a whole lot of time for extras. That said, just a few news items that I thought would be interesting to get into here at the beginning of the week. And some of it, I guess, is some musing on Arrow. I don't know about you, Gary, but overall, what's your thoughts on Arrow this season?
You know, I didn't think they were going to be able to make me like Arrow, a Team 2.0, but they really have. I really feel invested in this a lot, and I realize you know, we've had a lot of Team 1 disappear, die in some cases, and return to us, as well as the Felicity love interest thing literally going away completely. And so I feel there's been a lot of shakeups, but they've really drawn me in tighter, I think, than I was before. I kind of like that Arrow is not as grim as he had been. much as much as they ape Batman in some ways, it often reminds me of when he's not only takes on someone like Robin as a partner, but in some of the other teams he's been in over the years. Specifically, I'm thinking of the Outsiders comic book, and it brings out to have these people brings out sort of a different side to him to some extent that I like a lot. That and I've enjoyed the flashbacks this season a lot more than seeing more of the island again. I've enjoyed that. I've enjoyed that they've taken them back in and worked them in a little bit better into what's currently going on, as opposed to the disconnect with them that I had been feeling the previous season or two. So I think in a lot of ways they've come back a lot stronger. The villains seem a bit more just dangerous or threatening. Honestly, Damien Dark with especially the magic, and even Ra's al Ghul, where I never got the sense they really let him loose. Seemed almost a shadow. He seemed a shadow of what he could be. And as I said, Damien Dark almost seems comedic at times. Mm-hmm. And that is not the tone that a Arrow villain should have. So I enjoy these villains. I enjoy the setup of Arrow killing that other guy. I think that's definitely the right sort of writing to have for this show. So overall, I'd say this season's been doing extremely well, at least for me. I know some people are pro Team Arrow 1, and I've heard people say, "Oh, geez, they need to bring everybody back somehow because it just sucks without this, that, and the other thing." And I think they've done good. The only person that I wish they'd do something, I guess, different with, not more because he's getting exposed a lot, is Captain Lance. He's there, but the character just seems to be vacillating a little bit, and I wish they'd use him in some forward motion way. He just seems sort of stuck.
Yeah, it's interesting because the article that I had linked to was essentially saying that there were a lot of people asking, where's Thea? Where's, what's going on with Laurel? Because you said that she was here, but she's, of course, dead in this timeline and so on. And they brought back the actress, but it wasn't the character. You've got Diggle, who has been kind of in and out. Felicity's around, but she's really the only other regular that is there besides Oliver that isn't quote-unquote new. And I think that you're right. I've heard a lot of people say that as well and complain about it. And I think that it's been the cause of a lot of turmoil with some of the longer-term fans. What I'm wondering is if they're not running into similar problems that other long-running shows on the CW have in the sense of budget. This can't be a cheap show to make. We have noticed a couple of scenes here and there where they have tried to do action stuff on the cheap, and you can always tell when they're doing that. But what's interesting to me is that I don't think anybody has ever put two and two together when it comes to the cast. Because in my mind, I think that for all the reasons that they may have given for why they're going into Team 2.0, I think that it's pretty obvious that it's cheaper. These guys are all new. They've only been around for this season. The regulars that were around before, if they didn't have a contract that only had them around for 10 to 13 episodes this season, they'd be a lot more expensive. So I'm thinking that, this was a pragmatic decision more than it was even a, shall we say, creative one, because I think this is their creative way of resolving the budget problem. But what do you think? I mean, it sounds like you're saying that if that is the reason why, or a factor why, that they've managed to sell you on the benefits that this creates by shaking things up.
Oh, yeah, I honestly think I like Team 2 a little bit better than I like Team 1. It seems like there's a lot more diversity. And when I say diversity, I don't mean necessarily in the racial sense or anything like that. But it just seems like, okay, we how many archers are we going to have? How many people that beat up each other in leather are there going to be? I like Mad Dog with his jersey outfit. And even though I just bought one, that's a whole other issue. I just feel that the team is a lot more diverse than they were before. They were so Oliver-centric before, and they're really not anymore. And they bring in a lot of different things, and I think I like that.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think that it is starting to work. I would say that if you had asked, or we had had this discussion earlier this season, I might not have answered the same way. But I think that they are growing on me a bit. I still feel like they need to do a little bit more with some of the characters, but they've done a nice job of giving us their backgrounds. And
Well, that's a nice thing about a new new group too. Hey, everyone gets a new background episode.
That's it. Yeah. We can really fill out that 22 episode season a little bit better.
Yeah.
Prometheus, I'm still on the fence on.
What's his name? Dorn from Next Generation's voice?
It is.
Oh, okay. I was listening to it in promos and I was like, by Kalis's blade, I know that name. I know that's
indeed you do.
Yeah,
yeah, it's kind of distinctive, isn't it?
But he's not going to actually play the character, though.
No, not from what I can tell. For me, and this is maybe just a very minor detail that no one else would be bothered by this. Prometheus's theme music is a little cheesy for me, because whenever he does something horribly evil. The music goes like, and it sounds almost like what Wayne and Garth used to do on Wayne's World when they were going into Dissolve. It sounds almost exactly like that. And I just think to myself, like, wow, you couldn't have come up with something just a little more sinister? It sounds like something that someone would come up with for, like, melodramatic stuff in their high school play, not something on Arrow. I may just be overstating it, but it's still just a little jarring. It doesn't seem to fit.
As long as he's not Roy, I'll be happy. So that's all.
No, you know, I still think that at the end of the day, it's going to turn out to be Tommy. That I don't know if they will pull the Flashpoint card, but that's still my theory out there. Is that they'll say that it was Tommy, and that I think if they do, they'll either have that he of course didn't die, or that Flashpoint changed the timeline and he's around, and that's why that he died in the original timeline, but Flashpoint changed that. So yeah, we'll see. All right, so the only other thing that was kind of on my mind was something that was an interesting spin on a topic that we've had quite a bit on our show. Excuse me, taking a quick drink there. And it comes down to what we've talked about many times, which is this whole idea that we're seeing this, you know, conversion over to digital streaming and everything else, and all these other considerations about bandwidth and bandwidth caps for taking place in cable internet and all this kind of stuff aside. This whole idea that, you know, you've got Netflix, you've got Hulu, you've got Amazon, you've got the, you know, CBS wants to have their own app, and HBO has an app that you can get separately, and you've got everything that everybody ever wanted, which was, let me pay for my own channels. Let me pick the ones I want and pay only for those.
Now, I've always been against this, but go ahead.
Well, this is what a lot of people wanted, and they're getting what they wanted, and I think that it is, you know, be careful what you wish for, because, yeah, I think what people are finding is that it is a lot more expensive. But one of the interesting things that that somebody did bring up, and this is, I'm curious about your opinion. What they said was essentially that on the, you know, yes, you are paying perhaps a little bit more, or when you add everything up, you're paying as much as you did before for the channels that you're now selecting, and you're not getting as much quote-unquote bang for your buck. But does the fact that you are paying for that service, for those particular channels, actually mean that you get to invest in that studio or that content creator's future activities and projects? So, for instance, you pay for your subscription to digital streaming on Netflix.
Yes.
You're then investing in their ability to create the content that you are paying to see. And in theory, the same thing for Hulu, for Amazon, for CBS, for HBO, and so on. So, even though it may be costing you more, by having that, by directly investing in that content or in that content delivery system, are you really not just, you know, maybe you're not so much getting nickel and dimed, but you're letting your wallet and your money basically speak directly to the market? You're investing in what you want to see.
So you're paying for your own ratings. Is that what you're saying?
Maybe. That's why I wanted your thoughts on that, because to me, I heard that and I thought, you know, that never really seems to come up, is that the flip side to this is that we are more directly investing. We are not just getting a channel that is part of a larger package that we are forced to buy in order to get a handful of channels that we want. We get to buy or invest in product on this platform. So for instance,
I'd use the word consume.
Consume. Okay.
Because really, when you're said and done, you don't have anything. Invest would seem to say, like, you have some after the fact, you know, involvement or thing, but really you don't. Once a show airs, so you paid to watch it, so they'll know that people bought it. But other than that, I don't know how much going forward. You can't say you want to see somebody with orange hair and you're going to get it. I just don't see that level of interaction. Yes, you might take it as a vote that showrunner or the script writers are popular, but I mean, I wonder how much more of it actually does filter through that, you know, even in this age of social media, is the writer going to know that 10 people want to see another Oliver romantic liaison? It might get posted a few boards, but how does that actually get back to, you know, the writer or the showrunner that they're going to say, oh, yeah, people want that?
Well, I guess the question is, or maybe it is simply, it's simpler than that. I don't know if that's the level of interaction or investment that I'm thinking of or that others are saying. No. Because the way that I heard it was basically along the lines of similar to what we've said before with CBS All Access or whatever it is, right? You want there to be beyond this first season of Star Trek Discovery. We watch the first season whenever it actually shows up. We want more. By subscribing to their all-access service, we are, in fact, essentially giving them money to make more of what we are asking for. By tuning in through their service, paying for the service for the show that we are looking for. So but the theory, anyway, is that by actually paying for that service, we are telling them we are willing to do this for the material that you delivered to us, and that is our vote that we want more of that. Where, quite honestly, there is no quote-unquote direct model for that right now. There's Nielsen ratings, but the ratings don't necessarily include us. It's a statistical sampling, right? Where this is actually direct, and you're basically paying them to create something that you want, because otherwise you're not going to pay for that service.
Well, I agree with you if it was like crowdsourcing or Indiegogo or one of those type of fundraising type of things. But, you know, even now, for example, where HBO has a standalone product going, is the fact that I subscribe to HBO Now. Or go, I guess it's now for the standalone. Does that mean that they know I want one more episode of Game of Thrones to close the season out? I know what you're saying. You would think that directly funding the entertainment sources would cause you to have more influence, voice, say. But I don't know that that our current models still reflect that.
It's an interesting question, right? And that's where I am going to close out this particular episode with that question out to our audience and to our listeners. What do you think? Do you think that basically they're going to do whatever they want regardless? Or is this going to be a more direct way for us to say, this is what we want. This is what we're willing to pay for. So give us more of this. I see it both ways. And the reason that I feel that way is that if I subscribe to Netflix, Netflix doesn't know why. They never ask me why, right? So if I subscribe to Netflix and I say that I'm subscribing to that because of Daredevil and Jessica Jones and Luke Cage and The Defenders and some of their anime and things like that, how do they know that that's why I did it? They only know in the most vague sense, oh, we have this slate of programming and our subscription numbers went up or down.
Well,
they have a vast amount of stuff. And yeah, do they count the number of times things have been streamed or accessed? Sure. But my dollars don't go directly into, you know, like they don't sit there and say, great, you want to subscribe. Why are you subscribing? So to me, if I subscribe to All Access and there are four shows on there, one just happens to be Star Trek, do they know that that's why I hit subscribe? Or are they just going to interpret it in general terms? You know, I would hope that they would go a little bit deeper than that, but it's still not a matter of me sitting there. And maybe if it were something that were a little bit more parsed out, like iTunes, for instance, I think is a little bit more of a direct demonstration. They know that I paid for this episode of this show, for instance.
Because even though I'm on Amazon, right? Yeah. Because even though Netflix knows that what you're watching, when you're watching, how long you watch it for, that's true. Just, you know, when you watch 12 things, they don't know which of those 12 things was what hooked you.
Exactly. Which one was the one that I paid to get on there for, and which one was the one that I watched simply because I had the service.
Yeah, so if they drop everything down to $1.25 and you have to pay every time you watch it, then you might know.
And I'm surprised they haven't done that.
Oh, jeez, I should have shut my mouth.
Well, Amazon kind of does that, right? Yeah. I mean, even as an Amazon Prime member, you don't get free access to what just came on. You still have to pay if you want to get that show or whatever else. I mean, there's some stuff that's free. But you could do Amazon Video, not have Prime, and you'll be paying for those episodes. Like The Man in the High Castle, yeah, I got to watch because I had Prime, but you know, that's a yearly subscription. It's just a perk. But yeah, it's an interesting way of looking at it. Like, I can definitely see why people feel like, you know, the fact that I click a button saying that I'm paying for this or that I am directly doing this, it does feel like you have more of a say, or you are voting with that purchase. Your dollar is your vote in this particular case. But I don't know that paying for one of these services that has many things going on is ever going to be perceived the way that you intend it to be perceived. So, I would love to hear the opinions of others out in the audience. But what we're going to do now is wrap this particular show up, and when we come back next time, we're going to get into the first of 2 weeks' worth of episodic discussion. So, until then.
And so ends another epic episode of The Critical Myth. If you want to leave a comment for this show, head over to vognetwork.com. Not only can you find links to the podcast version of each show, but there is a dedicated forum, a ton of written reviews, and related articles by the crew throughout the site. For the written reviews, you can even leave your own review, so let us know if you agree or not. You can also leave comments on our Facebook page, Critical Myth, on Twitter at Critical Myth, or Google Plus under The Critical Myth Show. Any and all use of copyrighted material is only intended for discussion, commentary, parody, or educational purposes, in accordance with U.S. Code Title 17, also known as fair use. In other words, please don't sue us. And of course, the statements and opinions of the Critical Myth crew are not necessarily those of the VOG network, its partners, or affiliates, but let's face it, we're probably right anyway. Until next time, watch, read, and listen, and believe in the critical myth.